This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3498 for Wednesday the 29th of December 2021. Today's show is entitled, Linux In-Laws S01E45, The Big Xmas New Year Bash with the Grumpies. It is hosted by Monochrome, and is about 135 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is the same as the title, so I'm not going to repeat it.
This is Linux In-Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mom! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusty guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. And rolling. This is something remotely known as Season 1, Episode 45 of The Linux In-Laws. Good evening.
Season 1, man. Where is the season? Anyway.
You do season 1.
Amazing.
Season 1 is a very long season. As you probably have guessed, the listeners, now we have the Grumpy Recorders back once again to share their thoughts on 2021. As in the great Christmas and New Year's episode.
Yeah, exactly. Yay. Hi, nice to be here again.
Welcome.
Robert. Yes, thanks for having us. Coders.
How is the grumpy coding going?
Grumpy coding is doing very, very well, man. Right.
It's up. Good. Grumpy coding is up. Absolutely.
Exactly. In 2022, right, grumpy coding will be the new big thing. Right?
So you got rid of the old.
No, actually not, right? But the question was phrased this way. So anyway. Yeah. Do we need to introduce ourselves? I don't think
yeah,
so.
You
right?
probably do, actually. Yes, exactly. Now is the time to do some marketing.
So, Thomas, maybe you start with introducing yourself, and then I go.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I'm Thomas. I'm being paid for writing software since 2004, so I've done it for a little while. And currently, I work for AWS. That's me.
And your
which is Amazon coder, Web right? Services.
Of course. Amazon Web Services. Yeah, that's yes. right.
Jeff, yeah. If you're listening, the email address is sponsor@linuxinlaws.eu.
Yes, we're still waiting.
Hi, Jeff.
For sure. My name is David, working maybe almost as long as Thomas in the software industry, right? And worked as software engineer, software architect, project manager, blah, blah, in the past, right? Right now I'm focusing more on training content by working a lot with a company called Redis.
Everybody knows me. I'm the host of Linux In-Laws along with...
myself, Martin.
Yes, Martin, that was your cue. Exactly.
Nothing better than an awkward pause.
We can cut this out, maybe.
We don't do anything.
Yeah, you don't do any post-processing. We can basically screw this entire episode entirely up without having it post-processed at all. This is
David, just go for it.
Can we swear as well?
Of course we can.
Yes, yeah.
Our podcast is not as explicit.
That's
so
fucking
you can say
great.
Whatever you want. Exactly. You can say whatever you want.
Even about AWS, yeah.
You can even take the piss at AWS.
Because your opinions are your own, right? Anyway.
Yes.
Whether you will have a job in the morning, that's a totally different issue. But
so we can speak completely freely. This is nice.
Of course you can.
Hey, there is a much better podcast out there, which is called Listen. No, I'm just kidding. You can cut this out.
So, people, if you're listening, if you still happen to be on mainframes, Grumpy Old Coders is your podcast.
We wish we'll mock up to mainframes.
Do they even know what mainframes are, these grumpy coders?
Yeah, sure. I think they know what MIPS are and so on. Right?
I think, Martin, they are called Grumpy Old Coders for a reason.
Well, they seem to have a very recent IT experience compared to you and Chris.
Well, we're down with the kids, you know. We know what's going on.
I know what a microservice is.
Only with the cool kids, right? With all those full-stack developers. Oh, no offense.
Well, in fairness now, I reckon that David is the only one wearing a beard, right? So,
well,
or sporting a beard, let's put it this way.
Thomas is doing as well, right?
Yeah,
Thomas,
really? My profile picture is very old on LinkedIn, I should say that.
You've become one of these hipsters too? So Rust is your favorite language and stuff? Excellent.
Does that come with a beard?
Actually, I'm preferring Kotlin, right? I'm basically more strange than Rust. Right.
Even more hipsterish.
Kotlin? Yeah. I thought that was a stillborn.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Anyway, we'll get to programming languages later.
Yeah, we do. Well, I guess.
Okay, yes.
We don't have a script, so we don't know. But
exactly. We do have a script. Which brings us back nicely to the non-existent script.
If only you'd read it.
So, Martin, why don't you explain what tonight's episode is all about?
All right, sure. So, last year, in 2020, we did some predictions on 2021, and we talked about a number of topics, and we're going to revise those today with the help of the Grumpy Old Coders and get their input as well to see how this year panned out, indeed. And we can also see if Chris can beat his record of saying full disclosure in one episode of 1023. So if you listen to last year's episode, that's how many do.
Did you at any point count the number of full disclosures in 1 year? Well, maybe we should do this.
Thankfully enough, I control the post-processing of this podcast.
Which post-processing?
The non-existent one.
Okay,
question one. So let's start with, what was our prediction of the future of Red Hat last year? Would you like to start with that one?
Well, I said it's going to be incorporated in the whole in the good old IBM, and to some extent that has happened, because quite a few people have been let go. IBM has successfully, I reckon the word is still out on there, managed to streamline, align the organization. The best example is probably Breaking the Promise, as in CentOS 8 will go down the road of what I'm looking for, 86? No, will be sunsetted, exactly. Will be sunsetted before the year's over. It will no longer exist in next year. Quite a few people...
You mean will no longer be maintained, presumably. It will still exist.
Sorry, it will still exist, yes, but it will no longer be maintained. There's then a rolling release upgrade. But quite a few people, I reckon, got very upset about this fact, because that pretty much broke the promise that Red Hat made and IBM then broke subsequently. So Red Hat will still be there. But maybe IBM should just wait until the market capitalization of a company called Microsoft has really increased, and then they can be bought for a fair price by Microsoft. If current stock prices and thus market caps are anything to go by.
It's interesting. So why do we think Microsoft would buy Red Hat?
No, Microsoft would simply buy IBM.
By IBM, okay.
Well, that exactly.
Makes sense. Really?
Indeed.
Indeed. It doesn't sound that obvious for me.
So, Microsoft. Tanya, Mr. Nadella, if you're listening, the email address is sponsor@linuxinlaws.eu.
We're still waiting since last
year. And you can hire Christoph as a consultant for basically doing this acquisition, right? Anyway.
No, I mean, to be honest with you, Microsoft would then still get the few remaining customers that they don't have already. And some old shit, like old iron and stuff.
Yeah, the interest, the one thing that Microsoft doesn't have really is it they don't have their
which, by the way, is still the money spinner for IBM. Because if you take a look at how mainframes are sold, this is where the moolah comes from. On an annual basis.
Interesting. It sounds a little bit like, I'm not sure, right? But it sounds totally legacy to me to do this, right? Wouldn't a company like Microsoft better invest into something like the future? Wouldn't it be to basically extend their market share in cloud and whatever? So how would IBM help with that? I mean,
actually, one prediction we made last year was that Microsoft is going to buy Canonical instead. So,
yeah,
but this makes more sense.
That didn't happen.
No, that didn't happen. Indeed, it didn't.
Yeah, but think about it. What would Microsoft gain by buying Canonical? I mean, Ubuntu is out there. It's open source. It's for free. So why? Why would they do that?
They buy many things.
I'm not sure, right? The thing is in cloud, right? Right now, if you spin up an instance of Linux or whatever, right? Then typically, no one cares too much about support anymore, right? And this is a kind of maybe a systematic issue, right? That whatever is provided there as service is called fully managed and supported.
Yeah, exactly.
How much is it really fully managed and so supported, right? So spinning it up and or re-spinning it up if it dies is one thing.
Oh, I see.
But supporting it in reality, I mean, there is some intellectual property related associated to Ubuntu, let's say, right? And maybe it would help them to have their own cloud. I mean, their own Linux distribution.
That makes sense based
on that, which can be fully supported by them, right?
So Ubuntu would be a first-class citizen with in-house support from Microsoft.
Exactly, because no one. That makes sense. I mean, not against Microsoft Windows, but a bit today, maybe. But no one deploys right now stuff on Windows Server anymore.
Indeed. The fact that about 80% of the container user lands actually are Ubuntu. Yeah. So if Canonical says that
skewed. I mean, that is skewed because containers are sort of built around a Linux kernel to begin with. You know, I know Windows Server is catching up and there are Windows containers for years. I don't know where they are now. But I would say that statistic is skewed. You should probably look at everything that is deployed, not just containers.
Did you say Windows Server is catching up?
This is called an alternative universe, Martin, if you're familiar
with
it. There are containers for Windows servers.
I heard about these two containers, yes.
I don't know if they have any traction yet. I don't know about that. I'm not saying it hasn't. But I imagine if you think about containerizing your application, you're kind of already in Linux land, right? So that's all I'm saying, right? So I'm thinking the statistic is probably skewed, sort of selection bias.
But it doesn't contradict the argument that Microsoft could have an interest to basically acquire Canonical in order to have its own supported or Linux distribution, but actually some people that know this stuff really, instead of just basically bringing some Linux up by not knowing listeners, too much.
Dear listeners, if you're out there, if you run Linux containers, the email address is containers@grumpyoldquarters.org. Sorry, containerconsultancy@grumpyoldquarters.org.
You need to create that email. You sent this to Thomas directly.
Excellent.
I don't do Windows anymore. I just know it exists.
Yeah, full disclosure, Thomas. Thomas is a .NET developer. Is a .NET developer, and .NET developers tend to like Windows.
So. I'm a .NET developer, but I haven't touched .NET in probably 4 years.
So and you miss it.
I've completely switched to Node. Sometimes I miss .NET, to be honest.
Called,
full disclosure.
This is called a cold turkey, right?
Eh? What do you mean by that?
Cold turkey.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. I still get the shakes and all that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Rehab works.
It does. I mean, TypeScript is kind of like C#, so I feel kind of at home. Yeah.
Talking about containers, I mean, completely off topic in a sense, but what I would like to have, by the way, is all containers which you can think about on M1, right? So on ARM, basically, right? Because and maybe you had something on your list as well, right? So talking about the M1 stuff, right? I really like it. Performance is really great. So I have our MacBook Air, which has an M1, and it's, just amazing, right? How silent, performant, and whatever it is for something like video and audio processing, and for this is really great. But let's say for development purposes, what I'm missing right now is basically the support of all containers I could imagine, right? So it's actually a bit problematic for me right now to develop stuff freely, because there is no container support.
That's not correct, David.
Yeah,
I mean, there is container support. Yeah, you're right. There is container support, but some containers are just not prepared for ARM, right? And I'm not the person who's basically doing this, right? And some other containers are much more complex that you can basically just do this out of the box, right? Without
Docker Desktop actually has a queue, has a hyper, it's a hyper, it's something else.
but this is not,
emulation.
Emulating, right? But emulating, yes. What is the point? I mean, you could use Qemu or whatever for emulating stuff, right?
But
the problem is then, what is the point, right? I mean, the reason why I have an M1 is for the performance, right? Why should I emulate something like an x86 or on basically a much faster ARM, right? I mean, for this purpose, there is a performance hit. I think I did read about it. There was a significant performance hit. I don't know the exact numbers. If you emulate this stuff on top of ARM, which kind of makes total sense that there is, right? So meaning it's possible, but it's not perfectly possible. And it would be better to have this stuff natively supported, right? Actually, I kind of had the idea to buy maybe an M1 Max or whatever, right? But the only thing which holds me back from buying it is basically that I'm not convinced that I can run all the containers that I need in order to use it for development purposes. Right?
So, people, if you're listening to this and if you haven't bought an M1, just buy one, especially the hipsters out there, because that'll drive up numbers so that Docker and friends will start to listen. And Apple.
Oh, don't buy one in the first place because it's too proprietary.
No, it's not just Docker.
Don't give money to Apple.
Right.
No.
The email address is sponsor at linuxillos.eu. Jokes aside, people, I have been using the M1 for almost a year now. It's a MacBook Pro. Okay. And full disclosure, it's my work machine. And Rosetta does an excellent job, by the way. And pretty pleased with Docker for desktop.
So you use the Qemu stuff with Docker,
yes.
Or Docker on desktop, and it works for everything
almost everything. Yes. Well, performance
also more
is
complex
okay.
Clustered solutions. I mean, or So let's say if you would run a cluster of a container which has a bit more complexity, like a fat container, does this work well, or do you see or something like
limitations? I'm not doing any Bitcoin mining on that machine because it's a work machine.
I was not referring to Bitcoin mining, but maybe or more complex distributed systems. If you, for instance, develop for microservices, right, there is a lot of stuff running. And one of the reasons why you have a beefy machine is that you can develop this locally on your machine instead of deploying something like a test environment to the cloud, right? Which saves you ultimately some cost, and the machine is basically paying for itself, right?
Yes, but it's one machine. It's not a distributed cluster on AWS or GCP or something like this. No. So being a somewhat sales-oriented technical person, no, I do not do heavy deployments on that machine. Mm-hmm. But the battery, for example, is just awesome. Mm-hmm. In comparison to prior Apples, that gets me through the day without recharging.
Yeah, the M1 I have here, the MacBook Air, is also awesome, right? It does something like, I was using... or some stuff ready, real-time 4K streaming and so on.
Do you not have power over there, Christoph?
No, we don't. This is a third-world country called Germany, so we don't have power.
No, we don't have power supply, right?
No, we don't, no.
We don't have, right?
This is the reason why it's called a dark sky country, Martin.
Exactly.
In contrast to the UK, which is still remaining in superiority...
Oh yeah,
across the centuries.
Yeah,
because they have accident stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
We definitely have Brexit. Power.
They are much better than England because they are no longer part of the European.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. We even have Street View.
Aha. Yeah, and you have a really great prime minister, right? Anyway,
yes. Well,
and lorries and petrol abound, I hear.
This went off quite fast.
Fair enough.
Anyway. I think we should go back to the
predictions.
Okay. The next one was Linux and mainframes.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
I don't have any opinion about it.
We spent quite a lot of time on it.
It's still around. It's still making lots of money for IBM.
Still around.
So what's happening? Are mainframes going to the cloud? Are cloud providers offering sort of mainframe compatible services? Because it would make sense, right?
They already have, Thomas.
Yeah, there you go. Not surprised.
Yeah, but why is it still around? I mean, it's legacy stuff.
Well, lift
because
and shift,
it's legacy
right?
stuff which works. I mean, there's
because
stuff.
Because it works.
Lift and shift, exactly. You can go to a customer and say you can keep exactly your same software and just move it to the cloud. That's very attractive.
I mean, the strategy that IBM sales has been quite successful for the last 2+ years has been, if you have a distributed Oracle installation consisting of 20+ servers, we have something called a Linux One system for you. You just simply shift the workloads. And you'll save at least 20 to 30% TCO as in total cost of ownership.
Yeah.
And they have been quite successful doing this.
Yeah, it's really hard to believe for me that, it's hard to believe for me that there are any greenfield projects out there that basically start by involving mainframe.
Oh, no, surely not greenfield.
No. You're talking about migrations and cost savings.
Yeah, sure. Legacy stuff which you basically migrate over there because it's easier to migrate it without too much pain by not refactoring your architecture and whatever. But at some point it dies, but I'm wrong, right? I'm proven to be wrong because otherwise some software in banking or some languages and whatever would not be around anymore.
Exactly. Right? I mean, mainframes are on the short list for what? For at least 10 to 20 years. But still, if you take a look at any annual report coming from IBM, this is where the money comes from.
That's amazing.
So people keep buying these things and keep renting these things.
I guess it's cheaper than redeveloping.
The only threat is probably the cloud.
Previous episode, actually.
There is a paradox, right, regarding this stuff. I mean, we learned this maybe all when we worked in consultancy in the past, right? The bigger the heap of shit is, right? The more likely people will not want to touch it, let's say, yeah. Right? Which means that this stuff just arrives because no one wants to touch it, right? They
it's
just
not,
want to keep it as
that,
it is.
It's a heap of shit. It's because it works, really. That's why people don't touch it.
And it
there's complex... I mean, if it would be something which is not a total vendor lock-in, if it would be something which is architectural well, but defined by some measures, let's say, right? It would not be too hard to refactor it to something step by step, which is more modern, right? But it was designed from the very beginning to be a lock-in situation, right? And you end up in a situation that you really have.
I disagree, actually. If something is built well and it works well, why would you refactor it in the first place?
Well, that's the thing. From a business point of view, where's the return on investment and rewriting it, and all you get out of it is something that ideally works as well.
Resources, finding human resources, even maintaining this shit, right? I mean, what is? Where do you find people that know how to work with mainframes, right? I mean, even as IBM, right? At some point, all those old guys are dead, right? And then you don't find new resources, right? And if you find them, they're incredibly expensive, right? And you should ask yourself the same question as a company who is using this stuff, right? So are you finding people that are developing stuff for that? Are you finding people that are innovating your services that are developed on that? Because most of the systems out there, I mean, sure, it works, right? But there are new requirements coming all the time, right? I mean, the world is not still standing. So you need to have scalability. You need to have new features. You need to kind of maybe incorporate more information about people, right? And this is happening in reality, right? And it's hard to believe that something which is running there, which just worked for 20 years, is fulfilling all those modern, maybe non-functional requirements or even functional requirements on top of that, right? Plus the human resources issue. So at some point, I guess, you need to go to something else, right?
Here's the catch. If you put Linux One on a mainframe, you have a Linux user land in front of you of your choice. You're looking at Red Hat, you're looking at Ubuntu, just name it. The thing is basically how many times in a given year you hear about outages on AWS, GCP, Azure, and all the rest of them? At least three or four times. But you're looking at and IBM, the address is sponsored at linuxinlaws.eu, just in case you're forgetting. IBM Z is called Z for a reason. It has zero downtime because you're looking at 50 plus years of engineering going into that hardware.
I get it, but if you have a Linux user land, and this feels exactly like a Linux, runs exactly like a Linux. I mean, I'm not a mainframe expert, right? As you can maybe hear here, but the question is a bit if it feels like Linux, it's used like Linux. So if you abstract the mainframe away to a degree that you can easily use it and that you don't have a vendor lock in on the mainframe, then the question is why should you use it and not just use Linux on other boxes. Right?
Because of the zero downtime promise.
Yeah, but it's a promise, right? There is no zero downtime. That's just unrealistic. I mean, you always have SLAs. I would be interested to see something like a contract which IBM gives out to their customers and saying, "Hey, this is having zero downtime. So we promise you a 100% SLA." Right? I doubt that this is the case.
No, just call your IBM sales rep. You fill you in.
100% easily. And otherwise, you get your money back, or if your business is down, they basically.
AWS gives you what? 4 nines? If you're lucky, 3?
11. 11 on storage, yeah.
On storage.
Yes.
IBM, I reckon, gives you more than that. On the complete system.
Maybe we should double check, right? Because the zero downtime stuff is a marketing phrase, and at the end there is always an SLA associated, which is
David,
having
why?
A number just, of nines just, and then the zero dot whatever number.
Why do almost all of the banks that I know, and quite a few of them because of my background and my legacy, run their, apart from the legacy aspect, they all run their general ledger on the mainframe for a reason, I might add.
Yeah, maybe for this reason, but maybe for the same reason why they run Fortran applications still, right?
More than likely, the general ledger would be programmed in COBOL, but that's beside the point.
Or COBOL, yeah, or COBOL. Okay, fine. COBOL.
The point is basically,
whatever. Right?
If they Erlang is a TK language. Anyway, it doesn't matter. If they
Right. It's telco. Anyway, I should have remembered this. Anyway,
Don't worry. So the point is basically, if you trigger this consolidation batch job at 1 a.m. in the morning, it runs. Not like a cloud that maybe runs or something until you hit an outage.
Okay. Fine. I mean, personally, it's okay. We can basically mark this as then this topic maybe, and we can say, okay, fine, it will be around. For sure it will be around, right? And maybe it will be around for ages because of legacy, because there is a lock-in situation for the customers, because they're, again, people don't want to touch it, maybe because it's stable, maybe whatever, right? But I mean, at the end, there is no rocket science, right? Whatever software you have runs on infrastructure, right? Infrastructure can be set up to be redundant, blah, blah, there. Mm-hmm. I mean, indeed, all this stuff, right? And you can apply the same patterns which you apply to mainframes, in a sense, to also cloud services, right? You can also make them redundant. You can make them scalable. You can basically, I mean, the recipe to achieve this, right, is if you go down, bound to physics at the end, right? So indeed, this stuff is rock solid and so on, right? But I'm not sure if you can just stay there, okay, hey, this is because it's around for 30 years, it needs to be much more reliable than something else which was maybe designed 15 years ago, right? To be reliable, right? I'm not sure if this is a valid consequence.
Right? On this particular topic, swiftly moving on to the next agenda item. Will a Skynet become IBM once again? Skynet, or would that be IBM? Will IBM become Skynet once again? Now, of course, for the AVID listeners, of course, the question was, will Skynet become NVIDIA once again? Because as we all know, at least the people who listen to some of our backlog episodes, there was an episode actually that had an interview with the Terminator, where the Terminator actually explained how Skynet came into existence. And funny enough, if history is anything to go by, Skynet evolved from a company called NVIDIA. Mm. Given their current stock price, they have the cash to do so.
Oh, yeah. I wish I bought NVIDIA stock a year ago.
Didn't. Too bad.
No.
Or Tesla. Or
Tesla. Tesla. Or any of them. I did Tesla, so that worked out nicely. But yeah, not NVIDIA. How annoying. So you interviewed the Terminator, did you?
Yes, that was last
the actual
year.
Terminator. Which one?
Exactly.
No, the 800 or?
No, that was in contrast to a T2. That was actually that was actually a T1.5. Because a T2, of course, we cannot afford because we're running a shoestring budget.
Got it from Wish or something like that.
So actually, we managed to procure.
That's why I ordered my Terminator.
So it's our Terminator.
So we managed to procure, to continue that sentence, we managed to procure a T1.5. We actually, never mind, spilled the beans on how Skynet came about.
Sorry. I'm sitting here like, what is happening?
Sounds Thomas, like the Grumpies have no opinion on the subject.
That's not what I said.
To be honest, man, I'm even not getting the question right.
The question is quite simple. T1.5 basically told us come back from the future from 2067 or something like this. Okay. Actually, that NVIDIA at its very core had enough AI technology at its disposal to become eventually Skynet.
Ah, okay.
And the rest, as we all know, is history. If the documentaries called Terminator 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 are anything to go by.
But surely a cloud provider would be the one with the biggest machine learning capabilities, right? So I would expect Microsoft or Amazon to become Skynet
but
first,
based
right?
on NVIDIA or hardware.
What hardware do they have?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
And do they actually have any hardware available? In my experience last year, they were severely running out of NVIDIA.
Oh, I want to buy a graphics card for a year and a half now. And I can't.
This is just cloud. I mean, they're
but it doesn't matter.
Their instances weren't available, right? Because they were all let out and
that, so. Yeah,
for Bitcoin mining or whatever.
Who knows?
But I guess this doesn't make commercially sense to rent NVIDIA boxes from a cloud vendor to mine bitcoins, right? It should not make sense, right? Because this is, seems like a waste of providing resources by the cloud vendor then, right? They could use it by themselves in order to mine bitcoins anyway.
Should they have a price algorithm to match that?
Maybe this is the reason, right? The cloud providers all mine bitcoins.
This is early December 2021, and Bitcoin now clocks in at 56,000 something. But if you double that price, I reckon it would make sense to move this into the cloud because you have a price point advantage.
This is what we're saying. And the cloud price will be equally adjusted for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The market should basically sort this out, right?
Keep their instances for themselves.
It's a bit funny, right? I heard, and I'm not sure if this is true, right? But it's a bit funny that there are some. I'm really not into this stuff usually, right? But if you see markets that are influencing each other, right? There seems to be, and I'm not sure if this is true, right? But there's one idea basically that the Bitcoin price is basically influenced by some illegal businesses like drug dealers and whatever.
Really?
I don't know, right? I guess it is the case, right? But funny is if this would spike, right? This would basically then cause something like more cloud consumption, which basically would have an impact on the cloud market as well, which is, if you think about it, at least a little bit ironic,
right? I would say, so you're saying my salary is being paid by drug dealers, basically?
Yeah,
what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it. That's
it. Why? That's exactly. Why does that surprise me, Thomas?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, not you know, exactly, what, but, whatever pays the mortgage,
maybe
I don't
a
care.
Little bit of
books, drugs, what's the difference, right?
Exactly.
Indeed.
Exactly.
Never mind.
Welcome to the darkness.
Exactly. No, I mean, seriously, I mean, what percentage do you think of the darknet actually runs on AWS and friends?
I don't know.
I reckon quite a bit, because if you do it right, it's not that complicated to shield what you're doing on that cloud.
No, it's all encrypted in many, many layers.
Exactly.
And the cloud provider doesn't get in. So, yeah, exactly.
That's exactly it, yes.
Oh. But there must be some front companies that actually pay the cloud consumption bills somehow.
This is where the money laundering gets in, no?
Yeah, I suppose so. Because you still can't pay cloud consumption.
He's not
with
spilling
Bitcoin.
The beans, is he?
Cartels, if you're listening, the email address is sponsor@linuxinnos.eu.
Spill the beans, Thomas. Come on.
Oh, man. They don't tell me anything. No idea.
Fair enough, Thomas. I probably would have said the same.
Please reach out. Also just to Thomas in this case, right? Also just to Thomas in this case. Because,
The email address is cartels@grumpyoldquarters.org.
We need to make a note of all these aliases. What was the other one? Containers.
Actually, I think even that this would work, right? I think the inbox is basically forwarding this automatically or whatever. I'm not sure.
Oh, nice.
I don't know. I need to check. I don't expect that anyone will send us emails to this, right? Just dear listener, right?
I might.
All right. Oh, man. Okay, how did we get to Cortels, actually? Via
Skynet.
Okay.
Skynet, fine. Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, we can answer the question with no, right? Because we basically assume that NVIDIA is providing hardware pieces to cloud vendors, and this will mean that they might by themselves not have the infrastructure to build something like Skynet, but maybe together with other vendors, they could potentially do this, right? And then there is a related question, right? Do we actually have any strong AI? I mean, a chance for strong AI, and I think Thomas and I discussed this in one of our episodes, and our conclusion was maybe not, right? Or most likely not. I mean,
it's years away.
All the AI we have right now is basically just simple stuff, right? Simple function approximation, classification, stuff like this, right?
This is what the press tells you.
Yeah, exactly. There's no conspiracy theory made up by Christoph.
Off on this one.
Anyway, so I don't think so.
Which ones of you have seen a documentary called The Matrix? It's about 20 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I saw it, yeah. I wouldn't call it a documentary, but it is
actually a documentary because the people who just call it science fiction are, of course, wrong.
I like the characters, Neo and so on, right? What has the Matrix to do with it?
How many times in a given day do you see a woman in a red dress, David? About twice? How many times in a given day do you encounter déjà vu?
I walk from home. The only woman I see is my wife.
You know what? Right now, I would like to have more déjà vus. Right now, I would like to have déjà vus that are kind of putting me in.
I see. So the Matrix is in full effect as we speak. Excellent.
Oh, man. Yeah, okay, fine. So pop culture or nerd culture, I guess nerd culture is the right thing in this context. Yeah, I'm not sure how we got to the Matrix now, right?
I mentioned it?
Yeah, indeed. But the question is, why did you mention it?
Why not?
Because we're all looking for the truth, no?
Yeah, and the Matrix is associated to the truth. You know what? I mean, it's a bit maybe a philosophical thing, but even if the Matrix would be existing and we would not be aware of it, right? Then in a sense, this would be fine as well, right? It wouldn't change anything about our existence in a sense, right? What we observe right now is anyway only a very small part of how the universe is operating and does it change for the bigger picture, right?
Very much so. But, I mean, it all boils down to the fact if you recall taking a blue or a red pill at some stage.
Yeah.
But my point is the universe doesn't give a shit about it if you take the blue or the red pill, right? That's my point, right? It's basically fine. And so what, right? The Matrix within the Matrix within the Matrix or whatever, right? I mean... The reality we observe is the reality we observe, right? And even if we would get another reality, right, then we need to deal with it, right? And again, the universe, the bigger picture, doesn't give a shit about it, right? So I'm not sure. Yeah.
To bring this to a point, I once read a thing or heard a thing I don't remember. And the conclusion was, I don't remember the details, the conclusion was if we are actually living in a simulation, then we wouldn't be able to tell. You know, there's no test we could run.
Exactly.
You know, there's nothing we could do to find out if we are in a simulation or not.
True. And the funny thing about the red pill, blue pill, blah, blah, and Matrix is touching this topic, I think, slightly in one of the last episodes or whatever is, where they realize, we are still in the Matrix or whatever, right? So this is the point, right? It doesn't really matter, right? So even if you break through it, who tells you that you're not and still in the simulation, right?
Yeah. Unknowable.
And so on, right? At the end, it doesn't really matter if it is a simulation or not, right? Because it doesn't make any difference for you personally or for the universe or the world.
Thomas, I hate to admit this, but you are right, because there was an Austrian mathematician called Goethe about 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Less than that, actually slightly more than that, basically, who proved that you're absolutely spot on, because what Gödel said is, you cannot prove the coherence of a mathematical system, and that's a layman's interpretation of this, within the system yourself.
Mm-hmm. There's a good Veritasium video about this quite recently as well, so I don't know if you follow that YouTube channel, but...
I don't. Yeah. What's YouTube?
Okay. Okay, then. Yeah, but it's a good video anyway.
Yes.
I mean, at the end, this is also one of the fundamentals of system theory, right? So within the, for instance, distributed systems have the same issue, right? So basically, you can't be for sure tell if something is down in your distributed system, because if you're within the distributed system, you need to observe it from the outside in order to do valid conclusions, right? So for instance, something like a network partitioning or being down is hard to basically decide from within the system. So the point is the same, right? You can't observe it from the inside. You need to observe it from the outside, let's say, right?
For those two people who are still awake, this is the insomnia episode.
I find that fascinating.
We turned this nicely around, right? The fact that we basically, I don't know, maybe just make stuff up around those questions.
That wasn't even in the script, the Matrix thing.
Yeah, exactly. The Matrix was not in the script.
Exactly. I want to speak with your manager.
There is no manager, I'm afraid.
Marketing
department. Fire them all.
Marketing department.
To be really fair, because just Turing just stole the idea from Gödel. I mean, that proves, of course, the point that there's no real advances in science. Because people just keep borrowing things and never giving them back.
Sounds a bit like IT. Yeah.
Indeed.
I mean, there is a bad science so. in a specific sense, right?
Moving swiftly on.
Interesting.
This is for you, Thomas. Are Microsoft and Google are going to eat into AWS market?
Oh, wow, we skipped a few points. Into AWS market. Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, what points did we miss? Oh, yeah. No, we did that one.
We'll get back to the global dictatorship later on. This is sort of horrible.
I think Google is still a while away. I don't know if you've seen the latest Gartner Magic Quadrant thing, but Microsoft is close on Amazon's heels. Right, so it still doesn't have all the services. Exactly. I'm getting to that. So it still doesn't have all the services, all the capabilities. But if you are a specific customer who has a set of requirements and Azure fills those, then you're good, right? So that's one thing. And the other thing is the ability to execute. Which comes into the features as well, but also how many data centers do they have? How much hardware do they have? And Amazon is still, as it is, years ahead, but Azure is catching up quickly. And that the strong point is usability, right? So me coming from .NET, if I didn't work for AWS, then Azure would be my cloud of choice.
Because it would, but you would also run stuff on Windows then, right?
Well, not necessarily. No. So you develop a web application in .NET, and in Visual Studio, there's one button to deploy this to, well, a hosted hosting solution of some sort, and .NET runs perfectly fine on Linux, which is the default, I think, anyway.
.NET Core,
so this is what I do.
We have to correct this.
.NET Core doesn't exist anymore. There was recently released .NET 6, which brings Core and .NET together again under one roof.
Martin, this is how you do proper marketing. Just listen.
Mm.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, okay, .NET Core doesn't exist anymore.
No .NET Core, so they got rid of all those different flavors of .NET, and there's only one single .NET now.
Yes. .NET 6 is the one to rule them all. Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay. Finally, right? I mean, it was a nightmare, even on Windows.
About time, right?
But certainly, you know, if you're working in sales in AWS, which I'm not, but I had to take the trainings, which was annoying. But anyway, Azure is the one that you get the most points. You know, what if the customer mentions Azure? Okay, in that case, you say this, this, and that. So you could say Azure is the cloud that Amazon is afraid of.
Right? Oh, so actually, you got trained on Azure. Working for Amazon.
That's okay. Guys, can we cut this out? I don't want that Thomas gets into trouble, right?
No, this is perfectly, I think this is common knowledge, right?
Yeah, but if you got trained by AWS,
I'm not saying what the statements were that were taught. But I think it's perfectly fine for a sales consultant to be trained in, okay, what are the arguments against the competitor, right?
The question is, if it is confidential, who Amazon is seeing as its main competitor, right?
I think that is also common knowledge. You just have to look at the magic quadrant, and Azure is the one closest, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, none of what I said is particularly
secret, I don't think.
I mean, David, if you take a look at the numbers, yes. I mean, exactly, that checks out. Plus the fact that Microsoft has about 20 years of enterprise sales at their advantage. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you see when you take a look at the growth numbers.
Man, fine. I get it. I mean, I would not underline that Microsoft has the better usability and whatever, right? I mean, if I use Azure Portal, for instance, it's a nightmare, right? It's all the concepts there are overly complicated for no fucking reason, I think, right? So something like, what is it, directories and subscriptions and whatever, right? I'm not getting this. I mean, the others are doing it much better.
Well, yeah, there's pros and cons. I mean, that subscription stuff is much easier on Amazon. That's true. But there's other stuff in Amazon that people find hard to use and easy to use in Azure, right? It's just
maybe resource groups were a good thing.
Resource groups are good. I do miss them. I've worked with Azure a lot, and I miss resource groups.
Yeah, resource groups are nice,
they're,
right?
They're so pretty
basically
good.
Just say, hey, delete the entire resource group and everything.
Yeah, that's nice. This is really nice.
I admit. But there's other stuff which is more complicated, which is... the Microsoft way, let's say, right? Anyway.
That's, of course, another reason to go back to the mainframe.
Indeed, it is.
Because stuff is not complicated?
No, it just works.
It just works.
Yeah. I see.
Magically. It works magically. It just works.
With zero downtime, don't forget.
With zero downtime, I was about to say that. as long as you provide power and, you know,
magic zero downtime, right? Just plug it in and magic zero downtime.
And your data center doesn't flood or anything like that.
Exactly. I just created a new email address. The email address is ibm_sponsored@linuxinlaws.eu. So,
there are even no data centers that could basically be impacted by any downtime or whatever, right? It's
it's all based,
it's just
exactly,
magic,
yes.
Right? It's like,
that's
like,
it.
Plucking in something and there's electricity out of the wall without anything behind it, right? It's like,
yeah, just happens. Put money on the table, exactly, and you put some machines in your basement, all works.
Yeah.
Plus that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Which, of course, brings us nicely back to the next topic of discussion, the global maddest dictator. And we discuss Bezos, Trump, Putin.
Yes, Trump is gone, right?
Trump is gone.
He'll be back. He'll be back.
I don't think so, man, right? Trump can't be back. How crazy would the world be if Trump would make it back, right?
Oh, 2024, mark my words.
Exactly. Hold your breath. That's exactly it.
They voted him in the first place, right? So
Oh, man. I leave the fucking planet if Trump makes it back.
Well, then, I guess you want to give Jeff a bell because apparently he has some sort of space problem.
Yeah, exactly. Bezos then, right? So,
did you hear the nice sympathetic laugh he did after he came back? Did you see that video?
Which one? No.
Well, the one he came out of the capsule with his fetching hat on. I don't know, this Texan hat.
real thing. And he did a totally normal laugh. So, yeah, you have to watch the video. It was insane, absolutely insane. So, yeah, I think maybe something's going on.
Maybe the links will be in the show notes. I don't know. maybe not.
Yeah, I can find it.
It is still around. No worries.
Absolutely, I mean, maniacal. Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Bezos is a strong qualifying candidate. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the CEO of Amazon anymore, so I can say what I want. Yes. So, yeah. Insane guy, but I suppose to achieve
doesn't
something,
like his job or doesn't like to get
no he's not in Amazon anymore on paper. No, I suppose you have to get somewhere in business. You have to be Amazon. You have to be a sociopath, right? To get up there in business.
Well, look at Musk, right? As example, yes, exactly.
Yeah, he's as crazy as the rest of them. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Also, no job at Tesla anymore.
Why did you apply, Thomas?
I imagined the interview going, okay, so you passed your technical test, but the one thing you said 5 years ago about Elon Musk.
So let's see if you can enter Russia.
Social profile.
Putin, actually, I mean, Putin, is Putin, I mean, really, I'm not too, what will happen with Putin? What do people here think about this? I mean, he's basically, I mean, nothing will happen with him, right?
He's dictator for life, surely.
It's been around exactly. For some time.
Been never a dictator for life, I might add. Similar to Linus or some other people.
Not sure about the benevolent part there.
No.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know, right? I guess he will not gain any more power, but he will not lose any more power.
Oh, no. As long as the Novichok supply doesn't run down, he's fine, right?
This is dark. But still funny.
I guess Thomas also not going for a job in
Russia. Whatever Putin's
doing. No gas bomb anymore. No gas bomb.
Exactly. Forget about KGB. That won't fly.
Who says I'm not already working for KGB? Ooh. Yeah.
KGB, yeah. If you're listening, is sponsored at Linus Linus, and you will take my
And if you want to send an email directly to Thomas. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Not really XGDR, I see.
Yes.
GDR for life.
Global Metis Dictator.
So what's happening on the inside then, Thomas? of something called the KGB? Still Greg Crack?
Oh man, I would love to be able to make now a funny name up based on this acronym, right? But unfortunately, I don't have any funny.
What do you mean, KGB or whatever?
Yeah, KGB, something which is not the actual intelligence service, but something else, right? So yeah, no, I didn't mean this. I meant something completely different, whatever. But unfortunately, I'm not that creative. Anyway.
Yeah. Kubernetes, something. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I got nothing. Buffer,
there you go. Oh, there you go. Nice.
What did you say?
Kernel Global Buffer. Yeah.
Kernel Global Buffer. Ah, that won't fly. What about Kellogg's Greatest Beer? Yeah, Kellogg's Greatest Beer. That flies.
Yeah, but it's a shitty company name, right? So we need to do something.
It doesn't
like...
matter, David. You see, Kellogg's doesn't do beer, but now they do.
Kafka Geek Base or something like this. Right?
Ah, this is worse.
Whatever.
Coke's Greatest Beard? No.
Did you say what? Coke? Did you say Coke?
Coke's Greatest Beer. Yeah, of course it's spelling strong, but don't forget about it.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, so it seems we are all not creative, but it's...
No, we're not.
That's fine, right? Okay. The question is, who is global Metis Dictator, right? I'm not sure. It's hard to judge, kind of.
We discussed Bezos, Trump, and Putin, but...
I mean, Putin will be still around, right? So let's say Putin, because he will be for sure around, right? Trump, I'm still not convinced that he will make it back. Hopefully not, right? And yeah, Bezos, see, David,
that wasn't the question. The question was actually, who is the maddest dictator? Not who will be around in a few years' time.
I think Putin is stunning.
In order to be a dictator, you need to be a dictator, right? I mean, Trump can't be a dictator. Trump can't be a dictator if he doesn't have any power.
No, Trump is just a salesman, right? Putin, I think, is actually cunning. I think he actually knows what he's doing. You know, so I would, as a mad dictator, I would rule Putin out. I think he's a very sane dictator. Yeah.
If this is possible, I mean, unfortunately, it is, right? I think if you look at the, I did some philosophy classes when I was at uni, and we talked a little bit about how fascism and stuff like this could arise, and dictatorship in this context was actually often a function of, or at least in Germany back then, right, of people to be too rational and less empathic and less emotional, right? Which is not mad in this. I mean, it's not the definition of mad, but in a sense it is, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, but someone who is very rational, right, and doesn't have any empathy could also be observed as a mad person, right, in a sense.
Okay, definition of mad then.
Exactly. So what do we mean by mad? Someone who is really just a sociopath, psychopath, whatever, right? And is behaving completely without any empathy towards other people, right? Would you call this person mad? I would, right? So in this case, I would say Putin is maybe qualifying quite well, right?
Well, as I said earlier, sociopath probably applies to every successful businessman, and psychopath, probably, but I would give it to all three of them.
So Linus wouldn't qualify, although he's coming from a dysfunctional family, because that's what he admitted, but he's not a successful businessman. So he can't, exactly. Well,
yeah, but there is a difference between, I mean, is he a dictator? He is a responsible dictator in the context of his project.
He's a BDFL. Exactly.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if this is. This is an overload of the term dictator, I would say, right? Because in this sense, everyone who is a CEO of a company would be called a dictator, right? Because a CEO of the company is basically also making calls on behalf of the entire company by maybe getting advices, but he makes the call, right? But he's not a dictator in a strict sense. Yeah.
So maybe going back to the Novichok thing, maybe who of them would you imagine would poison people for personal gain? Linus Torvalds, I couldn't imagine it.
Nah.
But the three of them in the list?
Probably not.
Bezos maybe also not, right?
Bezos, yeah, well, yeah, but it's a maybe, right?
He has only commercial interests, right? He's rich enough. He doesn't give a shit. He does whatever he wants, right? Trump is not just after money, right? He's really crazy. He's just after power, right? And Putin is in a context which is
David,
I would see distance to the others in a sense. Right?
No, don't forget a key fact. Bezos lost half of his fortune due to a divorce.
Ah, that's a rookie move.
I mean,
So, okay, fine. I wasn't aware of it. So he lost half of his money because he basically was married.
He got divorced.
But isn't this something which qualifies him to be less a dictator? Because it seems that he is trusting in love and is kind of having some empathy.
I would go along with that. I mean, imagine if that were Trump, if Melania says she wants a divorce. I mean, she would have some sort of accident pretty soon, right?
Plus the fact that Trump doesn't have any money, as we all know anyway.
So. Oh, yeah, there is that. I forgot about that. Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if he had. I'm not sure if this is true, right? I'm not sure if this is true.
David, do you still believe in Santa Claus, I wonder? Just checking.
No, I mean, I need not. But, officially, maybe he doesn't have, right? Because otherwise he would pay taxes. But
indeed. I mean, there's a starter.
Indeed, he has. But the question here is more about, let's say, maddest dictator. And the maddest dictator, I would say, Bezos, actually, is disqualified by just doing this by giving half of his money to someone else. So this is not like a mad but dictator in a sense.
Money to that person. That person owned half of his money.
Didn't really have much choice either.
Fine. Which is more or less the same, right? I mean, he could have protected himself, but maybe he believed
in
love and another person and whatever, right?
Exactly. So.
And he's not stupid. I mean, if he wanted, would have liked to protect himself, he would have done it, right? But maybe he doesn't just care if he has, I don't know how rich he is, right? But maybe a bunch of billions, let's say, right?
A few billions, yes. Still,
yeah, honestly, maybe it doesn't matter for him if he has 5 billions or 2 billions, right? That's
like 90 instead of 180, isn't it?
Yeah. Or whatever, exactly. It's anyway so much money that he can't spend it in his lifetime. Right?
That depends.
Yeah.
Many rockets to build. Yeah.
Rockets. Yeah. But not personally, right? I mean, it's not his.
Space travel is expensive.
Yeah. It's my favorite fact that he invests in Blue Origin $1 million every 8 hours.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. So there you go. Which is common knowledge. I'm not breaking any NDAs by saying this. It's, you know, it's well known. Well known.
Links will be in the show notes, maybe.
Anyway, can we close this question? I would say Putin. Putin, right? Because Putin is, I mean, Christoph will not like this, let's say Putin is a guy who is really rational in a sense, but he is also not very empathic. He would be the person who would poison whomever. I mean, not just would, he does it actually, I would say, right? But, or maybe not. I'm not sure if he has lawyers that chase us, so maybe not, right? But I would say Putin, right? Yeah.
I'd give it to Trump because maddest, right? Trump is more erratic.
Yeah, but he's not a dictator anymore, right? And maybe he never had the potential. The problem is I don't see him having any potential. Right? That's really. I'm so upset about this, to be honest, right? And I can't even imagine how people basically could vote for him.
He'll get back, and maybe then he'll get a civil war. You know, QAnon against the population.
Oh, nice.
Churchill once said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And he had a point.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
In saying that.
And then he wasn't re-elected after the war, as soon as the crisis was gone. Yeah.
There you go. He lived to learn. Apparently he didn't, but that's beside the point. Okay, moving swiftly on into much more
did we conclude dangerous anything? Waters. Did we conclude anything?
What's your take, Martin and Christoph?
There is no conclusion on the subject.
There's no conclusion. No, we discussed this last year.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We came to the conclusion
so that we discussed no 10 qualify, minutes yes. or half an hour.
So all like of this was for nothing.
Well, the main point was to see how the predictions work out this year. But, yeah.
What a fucking waste of time, man.
You see, there was an episode where the Grand Prix callers actually admitted to doing the podcast, and the same goes for Martin and myself, already. Not just because of the listeners, but rather for them having a good time.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's exactly what is indeed
the
now?
Reason why I'm here, right?
Exactly!
Yes, for listeners.
Works out.
That doesn't, of course, right? mean that our listeners are just an asset. No. They are much more than that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm just glad to be doing something. Normally at this time, I sit on a chair and stare at the wall or something. So that's nice.
It's a little bit like someone asked you, hey, how is
glad
it
glad to be of service, Tom.
Down here is backwards, right? But besides of that, everything is fine.
Okay, anyway. moving swiftly on, the next question was actually Apple One, beginning of the end for Intel. We already touched upon the M1, but will this really be the end of Intel?
No, actually, I think that Intel is got his as a little bit kicked, which is good, right? Because I think what they are doing, or what you can see this year, is that they are trying to actually invest a little bit more into architecture instead of basically just heating the same or stuff up and up again, right? I think they admitted that the M1 is just architecturally seen better than what they delivered so far, and they kind of even admitted in one of the interviews, right? I don't recall the name of the guy, but I think they admitted that they basically were a little bit lazy, right? By kind of just using whatever they did and just increase the stepping and only do minor changes or in improving the architecture, whereby Apple M1 is kind of a huge step, and they kind of gave the kudos to Apple for this. But if you look at the latest benchmarks that were released, it seems that they have hardly tried to basically keep up with Apple M1 again, right? So they try to outperform them, right? Again,
did it work? Did they succeed?
Yeah, they will, I guess. I mean, at some point I mean, hard to say, but I guess what it drives is more innovation at Intel, and maybe at some point they will or see some land again, right? To be honest, they still see land, right? They are still the market leader or in this domain, right? And Apple didn't change this, but I think the competition in this case is something very good, right? Because the competition basically drives also innovation on side of Intel, right? And this is maybe in the interest of everyone in a sense.
Yeah, but you guys are interesting. You make it sound like Intel never had any competition, right? So Intel,
AMD,
right? So that
there's
AMD for years and years and years, sort of biting on their ankles, right?
Yeah.
There's all the ARM companies.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, AMD competed with them, but never. I mean, AMD had a bunch of CPUs that really got up to the game with them, right? But Intel was for a long period of time ahead of AMD, right? Maybe there was a period of time in the past with 486 or whatever, right? So where this was not the case, but then later. Intel was always ahead of AMD, as far as I can tell. Right?
Yeah, and, that's kind of the point I'm making, right? No, so Intel has the expertise to stay ahead.
Intel wasn't really ahead of AMD in certain cases.
Which CPU was better?
The CPUs were better and faster. The ones.
Which one was better?
Ryzen and Friends, for example.
Ryzen, yeah, but this is the new one. You're right. Since Ryzen, AMD is basically competing more heavily with them, right? But before Ryzen, I don't see that there were CPUs of AMD which outperformed equivalent CPUs of Intel. When Ryzen, right, Threadripper and so on came, right, they basically got more serious competition, but it was not like an order of magnitude or whatever. They still played in the same league, right? Now, when Apple released
the M1,
really, maybe not order of magnitude, but given the benchmarks, right, the M1 was actually really
marketing Apple's benchmarks.
Now, it's not just marketing, man. If you try, I have a Core i9, right? Beefy machine, a MacBook Pro Core i9. Really, really beefy machine, right? And I tried some workloads on this stuff, right? And then I tried the same workload on an M1 MacBook Air without any active cooling. And the M1 on the MacBook Air outperformed the i9 in my MacBook Pro, right? Regarding the workload. So did the stuff just faster, right? Or at higher resolution and so on, right? And this is not just something which is marketing speech, right? This is real. I mean, it's not also a synthetic benchmark, which I looked at. It was a real workload, which I used basically for producing something, and it worked really much better on the M1, right? I was really impressed. It was like, holy shit, right? They just outperformed the top level CPU of Intel on a device of that size, right? Which doesn't have even active cooling, right? So the i9 is basically making noise like hell if you run this workload on it, and it's slower, right? At least for this one scenario, right? It doesn't mean that it outperforms it for everything, but the M1 really is having I'm pretty convinced, right? The better architecture. And I think Intel admitted this, right? And now Intel tries to get back into the game by competing more heavily, right? By kind of investing to fix this on their side. And I guess this is just good for everyone, right?
It's definitely good, yeah. Plus, so I said marketing is that some of the claims around life of the battery and all this kind of stuff is that was pure marketing because they ran like videos at 5% brightness and all those kind of things to get to those numbers. So that's, you know,
if they do
that kind of thing in marketing, then, you know, they have to question their performance as well. But if
But
people, if you take a look at the market share, and I totally get your arguments, David, but at the end of the day, if you take a look at the buyers are mostly cloud hyperscalers that buy these CPUs and mainboards and what have you in troves.
Mm-hmm.
And up to now, AMD and Intel have been prevailing. But if you take a look at the global deployment factor, you're looking at ARM outperforming Intel by way orders of magnitude because of, for example, mobile devices. So yeah, you have
just to finish here.
So you have all of these smartphones that are mostly powered by ARM chips, but, and mm-hmm. this is capital B now, if you're taking a look at the inroads that ARM is making with regards to Graviton and friends, Thomas, I reckon there's not a slim chance, there's actually quite a visible chance of ARM also taking over in the cloud, in the hyperscalers.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, the Graviton 3 just got introduced and there's more and more workloads. You know, just if you offer a Node.js, for instance, that runs on these ARM instances that are, I forget the numbers, that are 60% cheaper or whatever, why wouldn't you do it? It's okay. It's amazing, yeah. It's amazingly cheap. It's
clear, because the big thing, I mean, at the end, it comes down to physics, right? In a data center, you basically need to cool this stuff. You need to
bring the
energy and so on, right? And if you can basically improve this by 30% or whatever it is as a percentage, right? This is a huge business case, right? So I'm pretty sure that we will see more ARM in the cloud or in the future, right? Regardless of Apple M1. But the Apple M1 is not, I mean, the question here was more about the Apple M1, right? And I would say the Apple M1 is not something you will see in the cloud, right? It's basically a consumer product or not something like the Graviton stuff. Or if you ask a question about ARM hitting the Intel business in general. Yeah, true. Apple M1, also true, I believe, but Apple M1 is more about consumer hardware, right? Something like MacBooks and so on, right? And in this context, I just compared it with something like desktop or laptop or CPUs, and this was my statement. But you're right, Christoph and Thomas, I would say, right? I think we will see a rise of ARM in the cloud as well, pretty much.
And Apple, if you're listening, just put the M1s into your hyperscalers. You make money, and the hyperscalers will make money too. So this is what is known in sales as a win-win situation. Mm. Apple, the email addresses,
because Apple doesn't know how to make money, right? So
I was about to say, yeah.
very
doing okay.
In case they want to make more money.
How can we make more money? Oh, let's listen to some podcasts.
let's listen to Christoph, right?
Excellent. Yes, you heard it first, people. Okay. Moving on. This is for you, David. Shakeups in the programming language area for 2021.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Let me leave.
I guess you will say Rust. Rust exactly. is the one which I mean I tend to agree. I heard more about Rust in the last
Rust
month.
Rust is the program language to rule them all. Yes, that's the word.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, right? But I at least it seems to get some serious traction because I hear people talking about it. I hear software engineers talking about it.
In Krumbach.
No, not in Krumbach. in customer meetings and so on, right? Anyway, so the yeah, me being in Krumbach, but anyway. So the,
sorry, I don't know, the thing is I'm not following this shit, man.
I'm not following it, but I hear about it.
Krumbach is a village in lower upper Bavaria, I can't remember, in the middle of nowhere, about 200 inhabitants. So if Russ has made it to Krumbach, which apparently is not the case, you would be looking at a mainstream language, like Java.
The problem is we don't have electricity, we don't have internet, right? We don't have any infrastructure, cars, no. What is a car,
that man? Seems to be the issue.
Exactly, as we already pointed out, right? And given that, it is really amazing that I'm doing a podcast with you guys. Or Thomas about tech stuff,
internet, right? Yes.
given the fact that we only have, I don't know, right? Yeah, hamster wheels and stuff like this, right? For producing electricity.
This is German. Sorry, this is Bavaria. Sorry, it's not German. Yeah. No, it's just Bavaria. That's all.
Yeah, and in Bavaria, we don't believe in Santa Claus, by the way. Right? We believe in the Christkindl, right?
Ah, there you go.
Not me personally, right? I still believe in Santa Claus. No, just. actually, I have to say, yeah, I do, right? Because I really think that Saint Nicholas was a real person, right? In the past, right? I don't believe that there is a Coca-Cola version of it which is bringing me gifts for Christmas, right?
If Lars Anthony Gorby, he's from ex-Russia, don't know. So it would make sense, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It all makes so much sense.
Yeah, so much for programming languages. Yeah.
Going back to the programming language topic, exactly.
Santa Claus programming language.
So it's Kotlin, or it's Rust, or it's TypeScript, or what?
Depends, right? It depends for, on the use case.
The question was shakeups.
That means shakeups. I mean, Rust is on track, right?
As in program language that will rattle the cage.
Yeah, but I mean, didn't this already happen? I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I have the feeling that Rust already convinced the bigger community and that people expect that it will win some ground against C++ or whatever, right? And maybe Golang. And so they whatever happens now is basically a little bit expected, I would say, right or not.
Okay.
So, for Kotlin, for instance, also found its way into Android development and mobile development stuff, right? So I think they found their domain, and again, right, I don't think that there will be big surprises around it, let's say, right? I don't know. Maybe there is this programming language which I see on Twitter from time to time because an old friend of us, Christoph, is working on it, which is SICK, right? Did you ever hear about SICK?
Yes, of course I have.
And
Laura,
do you think that SICK is getting any crown? Is getting any crown?
Maybe? It's not.
Why don't you think so?
It doesn't have a community that follows it, apparently, with in comparison to Rust and other languages.
I am a follower of it. More by accident, but okay.
So how many projects have you used it so far?
I'm not saying that I'm using it. I'm just saying I'm following it, right? This is the difference. I'm also not using Rust, right? So if this is a criteria, then yeah, Rust will not get any traction because I'm not using it. This is not how it works, right? I mean, just your personal opinion, right? So you don't think that SICK will basically win some land?
I would have my doubts, let's put it this way.
Okay. And why do you think, I mean, Rust, maybe, again, you know more than me about it. What is the motivation for people to use Rust over other stuff like C++, or there are also multiple versions of C++, right, or standards, or something like, for instance, Golang or whatever, right? So what is the motivation to use something like Rust instead of that, right?
If Netflix and Methadone doesn't do it for you anymore, you basically look at Rust because that's the next level of insanity.
Yeah, but this is not an argument, right?
It is. It is. Well.
This is busy. I don't know. Right? I mean, this is an empty phrase. It couldn't be more empty.
I mean, in my day-to-day job, I'm not thinking, I wish I had more insanity now.
Yeah. No,
I wish I could less done.
You see, there was, and this is publicly known, if you take a look at the total cost of ownership of a code base, Rust features quite well. The learning curve is quite steep. But the thing is, all these concepts that Rust have, like ownership, like no garbage collection, all the rest of it, ultimately leads to safer code. And that's exactly why you see this mainstream adoption. The likes of Microsoft and so forth, who said basically, forget about our old workhorse called C++, we're switching to Rust big time. That's exactly it. The investment so, is quite,
question, how
is
much
quite
of this
large.
Is actually real? How much of this is just community marketing and hey, fancy stuff and hey, totally hip and so on? And how much of this is really real?
Take a look at something called GitHub.
Yeah, but what should it tell me? I mean, listen, I mean, what GitHub tells me how many people forked it, how much people contributed to it, and so on, right? But those are in a sense also marketing biased metrics, right? Okay, there is a community, so someone convinced enough people to find it trendy and cool, but this doesn't give any rational reason. So my question was a different one. My question was not, hey, does it trend? Okay, fine, it trends, right? My question was, why does it trend? Why do people basically say, hey, I want to use this? What is the actual value add, and why is this value there, right? This is my question.
The value is quite straightforward. Lower total cost of ownership, lower safer code, and more robust code. And let me rephrase that question. Or that statement, take a look at the adoption of something called Rust on GitHub code bases over the last 2 years.
I mean, personally, if you ask me, I don't believe in this one language to rule them all, right? So, for instance, I write web applications. Would I use Rust for that? Probably not in a million
by
years.
By this measure, right? JavaScript would be a good language, right? I mean, this is...
But that's kind of what I was getting at. I mean, JavaScript, yeah. for what I do, Node and JavaScript just makes sense. It's what the browser understands. So, you know, unless the browser learns a different language.
Called WASM?
Yeah, I know WebAssembly. Yeah, sure.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I know
if
that.
If you've been following this, you'll see actually that Rust is the most adopted language for WebAssembly.
Is it? Okay, so I already know TypeScript. So what am I gaining by learning Rust? I mean, I get it if I start out fresh in the job.
A Porsche or two? Maybe a Tesla?
Right.
You asked, I'm saying.
Well, there you go. Yeah, so, you know.
But then you can only drive one Tesla at a time, so that's okay.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, JavaScript, TypeScript works for me. And if you say Rust doesn't have garbage collection, then, to be honest, that puts me off. I like garbage collection.
Fair enough.
That puts me off. I like to just new objects up and not think about the life cycle. That works for me.
For some use cases, not for all of
Rust
them. Right?
Not,
I mean, if you
Rust
develop system software, maybe not.
That's it. If I was coding a system kernel, then probably JavaScript would not be my first choice. You know, exactly. It's all about what are we doing here, right?
I mean,
back to the point that Kotlin basically is good for something like mobile development. Rust is maybe good for something like system software. TypeScript is good for something like web application or whatever, full stack applications and so on, right?
That's kind of what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You just mentioned a very important subject there, ecosystem. If you take a look at the growth of the Rust ecosystem in the last 7 years, I'm almost tempted to say that it took Python 20 plus years, JavaScript maybe 15 years to get through that stage. I mean, granted, probably JavaScript is with NPM and all the rest of them is probably the most comprehensive ecosystem that you have. But the growth of the code base that you simply can pull down from crates.io has been enjoying a significant explosion over the last 5 years, 5+ years, because the adoption is there. And I'm not saying that Rust is the language of choice for every project. No, I'm not. But it certainly, it keeps growing on the WebAssembly side. It's certainly entering the server side big time, and it's really competing with JavaScript and friends there, don't get me wrong. Plus, more and more people are actually taking a look at how you can combine Python, for example, with Rust.
Mm.
And there's also a company called Redis, I don't know if that rings a bell, that has this NoSQL database out there, where actually some people said that in contrast to the previous implementation language for something called modules, which are simply a server extension, we're gonna use Rust in contrast to C because of the apparent advantages that Rust brings with it.
Mm. Yeah, but still, I would never write a standard API application in a non-garbage collected language, because why, right? So for a plugin for something like a database where performance is super, super critical and can't sort of be easily just scaled up by throwing iron at it, right? That makes sense. That's probably the right use case. But for me, screw that.
Okay. Well, just out of interest, how many programming languages do you guys come across in your experience with your customers and things like that? Do you see Rust? Do you see? I mean, you're developing, obviously.
With enterprise customers, I saw C, C++, Java, and if it was a .NET shop, .NET or shop, .NET, right?
C#, bit of Python.
And Python, yeah. Python mostly for something like automation and stuff like that, right? So the DevOps
and data science.
Python, I didn't see, or and data science indeed, right? But I didn't see Python in production for any actual service. Same for Node.js. I only saw Node.js for something like toy projects or whatever, right? Never in a production system. Maybe some startups I worked with in the past, right? That were prospects or customers used something like Node.js or Python to do fancy stuff, right? But for the big enterprise companies I worked with, it was mainly C, C++, Java, and for some companies that were .NET shops for the enterprise software, right? Not something like data science or automation or whatever. The actual enterprise software was basically C, C++, Java, or .NET, right?
Yeah, so I mean, how much change is there in this? And if we consider the amount of programmers that work in this field, then the small amount of people that have a bit of a play with Rust is probably not significant in the whole scheme of things. It's a great language or not, but
exactly.
It currently only runs on a few machines anyway, so don't worry about it.
Exactly.
Leads us to the next language.
I'm right now on the 2020 State of the Developer Ecosystem report by JetBrains, by the way, right? It's a bit outdated, but Rust was basically at something like, what do they say here? Used in the last 12 months, Rust was behind Kotlin. Maybe this changed in a sense, right? Rust basically 7%, Kotlin at 17% because of the Android adoption, right? Then Bash was 39%, Java 54%. Fun fact, right? Java was basically 54%, Python 55%, right? SQL 56%. I'm not sure if this is actually a programming language. HTML, CSS 61%, and JavaScript was 70%, right? So used. And now this doesn't tell you anything about enterprise projects, right? This is basically just the overall usage, which means the report is a bit misleading because there are probably a lot of projects that use JavaScript in the front end and so on, right? And there's maybe a lot less system software which could potentially use Rust, but so if Rust is basically something which is going to be replace C, right? Then C or C++ has 27%, right? Whereby JavaScript has 70%. So now back to Thomas' point, how do you judge this programming language in the context of this question? And I guess context matters in this case, right?
So,
I mean, just take a look at Stack Overflow. Just take a look at something called the interest of being earnest. GOB. It's a favorite programming language index. The importance of being earnest. That's it. Exactly.
I guess it will tell you the same, right? It will tell you, hey, or maybe based on the actual overall usage of the program language in the world, something like JavaScript is dominating, but no one uses it for actual enterprise projects, right? In the backend at least, more in the front end and so on, right? But this doesn't, such statistics doesn't tell you anything about the quality of the programming language and so on, right? And the question is, in which context does it produce any noise, let's say, right? And what you say, okay, Rust is producing noise maybe for developing system software. Maybe it does in the Linux community. Maybe it does in the database communities, right? Because it's something which is used there, right? But Thomas has a point, right? Someone who is basically developing right now in Java or in .NET or let's say, right, or Kotlin, he wouldn't use Rust if there is no garbage collection, because you would like to have some comfort when developing software. You don't want to basically dispose your objects manually and so on for stuff like that, right? For something like, hey, maybe system software where you go really down to maybe dealing with memory allocation or whatever, right? It makes totally sense to basically do this manually, right? But not for every context. And it doesn't make sense at all from my point of view for something like front-end stuff, which is running in the browser, right?
People will check in about 5 years' time when David has been proven wrong.
We'll still be using JavaScript, I'm sure of it.
I'm pretty sure people will use TypeScript in the browser.
You never know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think the one which will get more traction in the browser will be TypeScript, maybe, right? I actually like it. And then JavaScript will still be around, right? And Rust will basically have its community. But with all the respect, right? We all live in our bubbles, Christoph, right? And
of course we do.
is more the Linux ecosystem. And okay, fine. Maybe there's a lot of noise there around Rust. Fine. Makes sense. But given
the fact that Linux is a tiny operating system with a tiny market share anyway, so.
Yeah, fine.
Forget about it.
But this is not the question, man, right? The question is not, hey, well, how big is Linux or not, right? The question is, what other software is out there beyond Linux? And there is a lot of other software out there which can be programmed in a lot of different programming languages. And the dominating stuff is not the Linux kernel, let's say, if it comes to the mass of software which is out there. Dominating stuff is software which is basically utilizing it somewhere underneath, indeed, right? But so meaning JavaScript, for instance, has for a reason 70% here.
No worries.
Rust has for a reason 7%, right?
Even though 100% of my code actually ends up running on Linux, I code against Node.js. So the code could just as well run on Windows. So, yeah.
That's fine. That's precisely the reason why a guy called David Baer recently made the switch from COBOL to Java about 7 years ago.
I don't know who that is. I have to Google that.
Exactly. It can't be me. Anyway. But I'm trying to go away from Java to Kotlin, by the way. Because I like Kotlin as a language more, and it's completely compatible with my
David, we already have established the fact that you're becoming a hipster rapidly, so no worries.
Have a hipster. It's this definition of a hipster, right? So I like Kotlin, right? And what does this anyway mean, right? I mean, if you're saying Rust is much more popular and all the cool kids are using Rust now and it will be used in the web and blah, 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 right? Aren't you the hipster instead of me, right?
No, I'm not.
Right.
Wow.
Then I'm not an application.
By the way, you are using an M1 since a year or so.
Almost,
it was released, right?
whenever this was.
Yeah, that kind of skips to them.
Exactly.
I had the choice, so I went for an M1 because I think it's a cool machine.
You see? You hipster, you.
Thomas Cook, if you're listening, the email address is sponsor@linuxinfo.eu. Okay, given the fact that we are probably reaching about 4 hours recording time now, we should probably move to the last question, which is actually the biggest prediction for 2021 as of last year. Linux Inlaws continues to be the primary podcast. Martin's prediction for sponsorship will come from Apple, Microsoft, and IBM. Martin, I think you failed on that one. Or did you?
That would happen. Oh, did you not get the memo?
No, I didn't. Can you explain, please?
Yeah, this is the reason is that all the money is going to Martin's bank account.
Yeah, exactly. It mysteriously disappears.
No, it all went to good use. Yeah.
Continues to be the primary podcast. The primary podcast for whom? For you guys, or
for the open source world?
Okay.
For the open source world. Right?
Okay.
I find the question a little bit misleading, right? It says continues to be the primary podcast. Anyway.
It still is. No worries.
Okay. So our target audience isn't sort of limited to the open source world. So it would be a good extension of us if we sort of annex your podcast and bring it all together into one. Very nice. That's my prediction.
We already established the fact that Grumpy Old Cold is not an open source podcast.
Yes. Mm. No, that's my prediction. A hostile takeover will take place.
By the way, what is qualifying an open source podcast? I mean, just wondering. What are the criteria for that?
That we talk about open source issues?
Yeah, sure. So if we talk about open source issues, then we are an open source podcast, but we also talk now about M1s and so on, right? M1 doesn't have anything to do with open source.
This is the grumpy old coders intruding, but that's okay because...
Yeah, indeed, right. So yeah, it's our fault. Sorry. I totally feel ashamed of, right?
I'm okay with it.
All the strange commercial proposals here, right, made in this podcast were actually in real our ideas. So if Bezos and others want to send checks, right, then please send them to Grumpy Old Gold.
Whatever goes, fine by me, no worries.
I'm not sure they can sponsor two podcasts, to be honest.
Yeah.
No, they couldn't afford that.
Pretty sure not. Anyway.
So, biggest prediction for 2021. Oh, 2022, let's make it 2022.
Biggest, is this a question to us, or...
It is. It doesn't have to be open source related, as long as it's...
I'm not sure what will be the biggest prediction. Maybe the graphic cards prices will go down, right? It's hard to imagine that they go higher.
Prediction, that's the hope.
That's a hope.
This is called wishful thinking, David.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe I will be able to finally buy a PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series X.
How many graphics cards do you need, David?
Anyway, I'm not sure. I mean, what was trending in our conversations in the past, Thomas? I think we talked a lot of about ML ops, right? So basically productionizing or something like machine learning and stuff like this in the context of data engineering and so on. And I guess this is something which will kind of, maybe it already does, right? But maybe it's still a bit in flux. And I guess we will see more like that, right? We basically see that this is more consolidated. Architectures are more consolidated.
Stuff like
feature stores and so on will be more well-known and kind of be part of normal application or landscapes, right? All this stuff will maybe converge a little bit, right? Because something like, ML AI or stuff will just become part of normal data pipelines, right? Maybe you will not call it out at some point. It will be commodity in the sense that it will be operated the same way as other stuff out there, right? And there will be some common patterns that will be established, right?
Yeah, instead of definitely heavy investment, more sort of custom-made chips for machine learning. We already have a couple of those, but there'll be more investment into that specialized hardware for machine learning.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's ML still going strong.
Maybe even the term ML ops will at some point disappear and it will just converge with whatever our dev ops is right now, right? Just being extended as a concept in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think this will consolidate over the time in a sense, right? So this maybe not next year, but my prediction is that AI ML as it is right now, right? So maybe so simply AI ML stuff, not the strong AI indeed.
That's kind
will become to a degree a commodity that we don't basically hype it that much anymore. And in this context, we will have also some patterns emerging that will basically be normally used, right? Like, for instance, feature stores is a good point, right?
Any other predictions for next year? Before we come to the feedback. As in the things that we get.
I mean, in which context? I mean, something which you can see, right, for next year, which I basically are looking forward to is, and what is already the case in a sense, and which will continue that way, that something like tech-wise, right, electric cars, for instance, will become completely commodity, right? So it's already partially the case, but... right now, it's a little bit like, oh, yeah, there's a Tesla and so on, right? And everyone associates this stuff with fancy things and so on. Maybe it's just me, but I just went a few weeks ago to my car dealer because I had to bring my car into the garage, and they basically had just as normal, right, as every single other car, an electric car in the showroom, which just looked as any normal car, right? Which brings the point up why... why I should find Teslas any more fancy, right? If other, I mean, maybe there's a good reason why I should, but anyway, something like this will also be more commodity. I mean, I guess my point is just that stuff which is now fancy or was observed still fancy in this year will be more commodity in some cases next year. I'm not sure if this is actually fair. If this is any statement.
Fairly unspecific.
it's actually not any statement, but it's the best I can do right now. Right?
That's okay. Yeah. You can go with electric cars, become mainstream. How does that sound?
Yeah, maybe they are already, but...
maybe not.
Maybe not. So, what is your opinion about this, Christoph? Martin?
I don't have an electric car, so I can't really tell. At the moment, I reckon here in Frankfurt, where I live, you don't see that many cars, and the infrastructure is hard. I just took an electric car for a spin about 2 weeks ago, just for the weekend, and it was quite disappointing, basically, the challenges that I had to overcome with regards to rechanging the car. Having to plan my route carefully between recharging points.
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike, even if I stuck to major motorways in this country, as in autobahns, as they're known in Germany, you have to plan your route carefully because sometimes the loading docks, as in recharging docks, are incompatible. There are difficulties with the payment system. So you really have to plan ahead, unlike basically where you have your petrol-powered car, where you simply drive up to a petrol station and simply put petrol in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
I find this overly complicated.
Yeah,
honestly,
to be fair, that should be outlawed, right? So that electric charging stations are incompatible between car brands. That's just absolutely stupid. And I think the government should outlaw that. That's just madness.
European Union should probably do this. I mean, in UK,
yeah,
UK,
agreed.
Whatever you do in the UK, right? But the European Union should basically do this. I also know one who has an electric car and he has a set of adapters, right? Which is also a little bit
funny, really.
Right? So basically, a kind of set of adapters or just in case that he doesn't.
It's like
have,
in the
right,
early mobile phone days.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Like. This is the new technology, right? But anyway, I mean, if you go, again, right, if you go to maybe any car dealer right now, they will have electric cars in their showrooms the same way as normal cars, and they look exactly the same way, right? So meaning, or at least the brand which I looked at, you don't see a big difference. And I was really impressed by that, right? It was like, okay, hey, so it looks totally commodity now, right? Nothing fancy, no fancy design elements in addition or whatever, right? In order to say, hey, we are hyper modern or whatever, right? It was just looking as any normal car, just electrical charged. And I think this is the future, and I look forward to it in a sense, right? I will buy one as soon as the infrastructure is better, right?
Okay, moving on to the feedback. I think we have still quite a few emails coming in. So, for example, a guy called Donald writes in, "In-laws, I'm looking for your expertise on setting up a social media platform called Truth."
Is this like the last name of this guy is Trump?
No,
or whatever.
Right? I'm just getting there. Apparently, he has some troubles. If I understand this email correctly, he has some troubles with regards to setting up a Mastodon clone. And okay. I'm just wondering if we can help him there, Martin. What do you think?
Who is this?
A guy called Donald, and Donald. It says POTUS.
Doesn't sound one of our usual listeners. Is he a new one?
Don't know. Apparently there was a fuck-up with regards to Mastodon a couple of weeks back. I'm just wondering what we should do with that email.
Right, he didn't get banned from any other social media, did he?
Apparently that is the case.
Oh, no.
So I ruined your joke by referring to Trump. Sorry about that.
You guessed the punchline. Oh, my God.
But it was maybe just too obvious. Stuff, right?
Wow, being the guest and criticizing the jokes. Oh, God. I'm not making any friends here. Jesus.
Maybe just
the next,
low,
the, next right? The next mail comes from an alias by the name of Thomas. Who writes in?
He's giving
I'm bored with my podcast because I don't know my co-host. What can you do about it?
I don't know what?
Thomas writes in basically, I'm bored with my own podcast. It's all about grumpy old, it's about grumpy old coders. Like, it's about an old coding experience. Can you help me here? Thomas, that wouldn't be you defecting, no, would it?
Oh, no, of course not.
So how
would you help me? I mean, Thomas.
Rust. can you use Rust?
Whatever the problem is, use Rust.
The email address is applications@linuxinlaws.eu.
Rust at Linux
and to apply as well. Oh, it's too much effort.
Yes.
I think Thomas might say.
Yes. The next email comes from a Mrs. Visser. Funny enough. It says here, please can you help me? My husband is way too much around me since he's between jobs and he doesn't spend as much time as he used to on minding his computer infrastructure zoo. Leading to all sorts of problems.
Oh, we have lots of advice for that, don't we?
Martin, why don't
it
you
It sounds like automation to Rust, isn't it?
Martin, that wouldn't be your wife now, would it?
I don't think so. Yeah.
I'm just checking. Because
by the way, it's not funny anymore if you call it out directly, right? Anyway, so it needs to be a bit subtle at least.
She didn't choose to be anonymous, so that's okay. Martin, that sounds pretty much like you because, well, there have been certain infrastructure challenges. Let's put it this way.
Oh, there have been some Ubuntu upgrade challenges. Put it that way.
But it's funny that you're right, that your wife actually writes into the podcast. And Martin, there's another note from
such dickheads.
Martin, this is getting serious. Martin, there's another note, and apparently this is just addressed to me. A certain Marcus Brown said that he's not impressed with Linux in his performance, but he uses an email address called marcus.brown@jva.a.byron.de. Martin, what the fuck?
Marcus Brown.
Yes, you didn't hire Marcus Brown as the head of marketing,
as his signature
might imply.
I didn't hire any marketing. We could better off without them in general. So. That's why we keep hiring them.
Do you know who Marcus Brown is?
Sounds like a baseball player or something. I don't know.
Does the name Wirecard ring a bell?
Yes, it does.
Oh,
yes,
Wirecard.
He used to be the CEO of that company. Martin, you didn't hire the guy that blew 1.5 billion euros.
No, did you?
No.
Anyway, I mean, the jokes aside, right? I actually really enjoy dark humor and so on. But I really enjoyed having this episode with you, right? It was a bit like how did Thomas say in one of our last episode, like a walk into the woods, or how did you phrase it, Thomas?
I said about being lost in the woods, but I don't remember the exact words.
We got. I think the it was very a talk in a sense, which is maybe because we didn't prepare well enough. But I really liked being here, and having just.
That's the point.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. But sometimes maybe we should.
Why?
I think it went fine.
I like being together with you guys, right? I literally do. I mean, it's always fun. It's always a little bit funny to have little sarcastic fights and so on, right?
Oh, we've got some feedback from Biku.
Yes. Why don't you read it out?
Okay. What is it? Biku says, hello, Dr. Zimmerman and Martin. Listening to episode SE01E43, The Great Battle or Not, I kind of felt like an Aussie batsman facing Curtly Ambrose in Perth on January 30, 1993. There you go. It was all incomprehensible and went straight over my head. Remind the listeners what episode 43 was, Chris?
That was actually the discussion with Professor Meyer on databases.
Aha, there we go. Okay, that's a very apt bit of feedback right on time. Now, don't get me wrong here. It was my inability that was to be blamed and not the way in which Martin and one of the grumpy old coder explained the concept behind the hipster databases. That Ambrose reference might go over the head of our American listeners as they don't know much about this glorious game called cricket. Well, cricket is vastly superior and evolved from something America's known as baseball. Right. Ooh, there we go. He also mentions, I recently came across a disadvantage of using a proprietary platform. I suggested the Grumpy Old Coder podcast to a friend, and he tried to subscribe it via AntennaPod on his Android device, but the tracker blocking mechanism on his phone did not allow him to subscribe. So, Grumpy Old Coders, you need to think about your publishing medium,
right?
It seems to be being blocked by AntennaPod or such.
Yeah. I told you, Martin, that SoundCloud is crap.
Oh, well, don't tell me. Tell the Grumpy Coders.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
Sorry, I meant David.
I thought it was over, right? I
said David. Sorry, I meant David. Right? Not Martin. Let me rephrase that. David, I told you that SoundCloud is crap.
No, you didn't, but it's okay, right? So I think for the most of the users out there, right, I'm not sure, man, right? We are not an open source podcast, as you already pointed out, right? So we assume that people will be able to use either SoundCloud or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and if not, there is a website which is called grumpyoldcoders.org, which is embedding all our episodes nicely into a player where someone can basically just press play if he wants to listen to it, right? That's it.
Yeah, I'm actually trying it just now if I can see it in Google Podcasts. Actually, I've never tried that. So let's see.
I think, I'm not sure if we have it in Google Podcasts, because what we need to do is, the way how it usually works, right, for everyone who wants to do podcasts is that the only thing you need is an RSS feed, right? SoundCloud is giving you this RSS feed. You register this RSS feed with something like Spotify, with something like, for instance, Apple Podcasts, right? You need to do it only once. And then as soon as you have registered it, they will basically update their internal databases and it will be visible to you, right? And I'm not sure if we would have needed to do the same with Google Podcasts, but...
No, it just worked. I just entered it as Grumpy Old Coders and here it is, and I can subscribe. So it just walks.
They do it automatically, it seems. Yeah.
The feed on the website, David, refers actually to SoundCloud.
SoundCloud. The website basically has an embedded player. You can play it from there, right? And the feed which I'm basically having on SoundCloud, I'm basically telling other services like Apple Podcasts or Spotify to basically just pull it, and they do it, and then they kind of host it or rehost it or however it works, right? People can use whatever service they would like to use it. Maybe it doesn't work with this one which you mentioned, but I never tried it with this one, right? But it worked quite well so far with Spotify. It works so far quite well with SoundCloud. It worked quite well with Apple Podcast, and it seems to work with Google Podcasts as well, right? I mean, there are plenty of ways how you can listen to it, right? And, given that we don't have thousands of listeners, I guess it should be fine.
Unlike us, exactly.
Okay.
Martin, remind me, we should get a Discord server up and running because this is exactly what they have.
Yeah, it worked well so far.
Were you not recording separately before?
We still are. So we've not tried recording over Discord yet, but just as a general
Discord is just for the communication, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So we invite guests to it, for instance, as you know, right? And then we kind of communicate via Discord. We actually even have Discord now has also events. So I did put our event here into our Discord service. So Thomas and I don't forget about it. I know they're unnecessary because there are also calendars and so on. But it's actually nice to have one single place where we have this stuff in it, right? For podcast recording. And this is basically now, our Discord. We don't have a big community in Discord, by the way. Only a few people joined this, and most of them are known by us. So, meaning there's nearly no community in Discord. So, it didn't work out that way. Let's say, right? I would like to have more people basically going there and just joining. But on the other hand side, given that of what our podcast is, that it's just a little bit of fun we are having, given that I'm actually not too. Yeah, I like the fact that we have some listeners. It is okay, right? It's beyond my expectations
to have listeners,
which is maybe because my expectations weren't that high. But I don't know. Episode 1 has 186 listens, right, or plays, whatever this means, right? I'm not sure how many bots are there out there doing this, but I think the best one is the one about open world, which is interesting, right? Which has 215.
David, I wonder why that is.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder why this is. It's basically more or less twice as much, right? Which is interesting. See, so maybe your user base is more or less as big as our user base.
Maybe it's just a title. People downloading it and listening to it. Exactly, oh my God, this is not about gaming at all. You know? And
then something.
Maybe.
Exactly.
Coding with Kotlin also got some traction. 119 listens, right?
Okay.
The Dark Side 123, right? Actually got good feedback about this one from...
That was an excellent episode. Never mind the number of people who listened to it.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I got also feedback from people that are not from the tech industry, right? Which was a bit interesting. So people reached out to me, our colleagues and friends and so on, that were not from the tech industry by saying, hey, yeah, we listened to this because we found it interesting.
Blatant plug, people, if there's one episode you should listen to from the Grumpy Old Coders, that's the one, apart from the just released one about women in tech. These are the two main episodes that you should listen to. I'm almost tempted to say forget about the rest, but I wouldn't picture it. No. These two episodes are the primeval ones.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think these are certainly the ones I'm most proud of. So thanks for saying that.
Job well done.
But they are not about tech at all, right? Which is funny.
This is exactly it. I mean, don't get me wrong, .NET is very important, but these two episodes have reached out way beyond the technical audience, especially the Dark Side. I mean, fair enough, you stole the title from us, because we have the Dark Side tech support.
By accident, that's I realized fine. The two
no worries.
That you have something.
No worries, no worries, no worries.
Sorry about that.
But our two Dark Sides, I reckon, are completely different anyway, so that doesn't matter. But the subject is highly relevant, and that's exactly why I truly recommend listening to that episode, because you touched upon this in a very unique way.
Wow.
This is my opinion.
Oh, that's so kind. Thank you so much.
And banter aside, because this is what matters. Things people will be in the show notes.
Yeah, cool. Really, thank you very much. Again, we usually do this just to have fun. In this case, we just thought, and maybe this is the reason why it is better than the rest in a sense, right? We just thought that it makes sense to talk about it, right? Because it was a kind of inner feeling which we wanted to kind of transfer in a sense, right? To just discuss it, and maybe the woman in tech stuff is also in the same category, right? That there is an issue that not enough women are in our industry, right? So if you look at the ratio there, it's interesting to see that, right? And if we remember our time at uni, Thomas, right? I think we were, how many students? Maybe 160.
Don't
160 remind me. Started in this group, and we had, I don't know, three women, right? Three women amongst them, something like that, right?
So. Don't remind me. Yeah. Dark times in that regard. It was fun still, but yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not regarding, I mean, not about fun or whatever, but it's kind of a problem to see that this stuff doesn't attract enough female persons, and I think this is not just a problem of the university or whatever, right? It's a problem regarding the overall mindset, right? That's let's say girls or young women already kind of, or in the past at least, were a little bit given the impression that this is more for men, let's say, right?
Yeah, it's such a shame. I mean, there are so many potential great female engineers out there who just never get there because societal pressures or, you know, gender roles just seal them away from it. And it's an absolute disaster. It's an absolute shame, and we must do something about it.
I mean, you can't rescue the world, but if something like those two episodes are a nice side product of having conversations once a month or whatever, right, with you, Thomas, and having a lot of fun doing this and also doing stuff like this with the links and laws as we do right now, right? I mean, then this is a good addition, I would say, right? So it's more than we expected, in a sense, right?
Mm.
Anyway.
Plus the fact that, of course, Elena also doubles as a voice actress episodes on the Dark Side.
And I really like the vegan vampire stuff. Vegan vampires, yeah. Listen to vegan vampires.
Yeah, this is the Halloween episode of this year.
Okay, that sounds fun. I'll make a note
of that. By the way, well, I mean, now that we are in this mood of making compliments instead of fighting or slightly against each other, right?
Damn, that was awkward. Jesus. It was really tense, Olia.
Yeah. But
anyway, go ahead.
Fun. Was it? Okay.
It was just fun. I think we all.
It's called banter. No?
So I really like the episode about where you did this role-playing game. This was the Halloween one, right? So this kind of Star Trek role-playing game. Well done, guys. Right? I think this was really creative. I honestly would not be able to do it, right? Because I'm not like an actor or whatever, and I'm not feeling like an actor. I'm always more like a talking just whatever comes to my mind, so, and I guess what you did is there is a lot of preparation in order to basically do this, right? And I really enjoyed listening to it. Right?
Thanks for the feedback.
Oh, sounds fun. I must listen to it.
Yeah. It was really great.
You haven't? Okay.
Not yet, no.
I thought we were on your
playlist. Very busy, all right? I'm very busy. I make a note to listen to this.
Very busy, right?
Okay, guys, we're clocking in at about way more than 2 hours. That has been more than fun.
Yeah.
Would love to have you back. Maybe January, maybe February, depending on your schedule. I'm joking. Needless to say, we are game to do it vice versa. Just let us know.
Yeah, sounds good. I'd love to do that. Yeah.
Okay, guys. To cut long story short, thanks for joining. Mm.
Thanks for having us. It was great fun.
And
thank you.
And speak to you soon. Take care.
Yeah. See you. Bye.
See you.
Bye. 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 Bye.
This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, Tab Attribution Share Alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for the song Salute Margo, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under Creative Commons at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
Tool is so. What is this again, right? I mean, this meeting software.
It's blaming the tools again, are we?
So it's running big blue button.
It's called big blue button, David.
There's no option. Oh, maybe I can do it in the browser.
I mean, where can you set the audio device? I mean, it's a conference software, right? You should be able to set your audio device. Man.
Yes, if you click on the system tray, which is in your lower right-hand corner, David, there you see this little speaker, but speaker icon. If you're on something called Windows.
Is he on Windows again? Oh dear.
I'm on Mac. I'm on Mac, but the thing is, I want to select the device in the tool, right? What the fuck? I mean, why should I do this via the system? The tool should basically have access to this, right? Or not?
It's just in settings on the top right. Anyway.
I mean, I'm not getting beer. I'm not sure where to get beer from. I'm in the studio.
Fridge?
Fridge, yeah.
I'm in my by the way, why are you always using David M as your nickname? This is totally confusing.
That's the whole point.
So maybe I take this as a compliment, man.
Of course. Nothing else.
I'm true, guys. How much of the last part of the conversation do we keep in the podcast? Honestly, I mean, you don't need to keep something like when I talk about our numbers or whatever, right? I guess this is unnecessary. It's whatever you like, but yeah. Should we end it now and just say goodbye and leave it to you to do the post-processing, or how do we do it?
Oh, unless you want to volunteer.
Your marketing department can do it, right?
No, we didn't tell you.
Fire off some more.
Yes, but this episode just went live. We're streaming.
I don't think so.
It was worth a try.
Yeah, it was, man.
Okay. Thank you for being on.
For a reason called radio, right? Anyway. Communism is great, yeah.
Yes. It just worked with the guy.
What about the movie?
Communism is really, really great.
Forget the movie.
Again, now we're doing this political stuff again, right? Anyway, meaning I'm not against the concept of communism, right?
I
just truly believe that the mankind is not ready for it.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. People, we are recording now the fourth hour of the
let's talk about communism.
Only another four to go.
Yeah, but it's not my fault, man.
There will only be another four hour. So no worries about that. So this is the world record with regards to the longest Linux in-laws episode. We look at about roughly 8 hours, uncut.
Director's cut.
The rest may be after the outro anyway.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR is kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.